3, 2, 1. Boom! And we are on. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another exciting episode of The Renegade Show. And today I have a really special guest with me, Anjali. Welcome to the pod.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on.
Great. So Anjali, why don't you tell us about your life as a student and then now a social entrepreneur? It's really interesting when I was looking over the LinkedIn.
Yeah, for sure. So I'm actually 17 years old. So where to start? So I've been involved in tech my entire life. So I started coding when I was about 9 or 10 years old. I was really involved with robotics my entire life. My robotics team, we were world champions 2 years in a row. So that means we beat over 20,000 teams internationally. So that's one piece of my background. The other side is the social entrepreneurship aspect, as you touched on. Taking this tech, so as a kid, I've always been really, really passionate about tech. And I just touched on that. But I realized early on that most kids don't have access to the same opportunities that I was fortunate enough to have. So in the 10th grade, I decided that I wanted to do something about it to help share my experiences with more kids because I benefited so much from my education. And the way that I did this was I founded a startup called Tech Explorer. This startup eventually grew to have a whole team of other high school students. And what we did was we went to other schools and we went to conferences and we ran workshops to help spread awareness of robotics and help bring my experiences and my passion to other kids. And through this initiative, we were able to help over 1,000 kids. I was invited to speak at a couple conferences, and just the experience was amazing. From there, I'll be going to the University of Pennsylvania. In the future, I've been admitted for a double degree program in business and engineering. I actually deferred my acceptance to work on my next venture, which is a startup called Startup Dojo, where I'm again in the education space, but I want to take my lessons with Tech Explorer and help other young entrepreneurs pursue their passions while they're in middle school, while they're in high school, give them the education and the support that they need, which I lacked when I was trying to run Tech Explorer.
Wow. What really struck me when I was looking through your LinkedIn profile and the accomplishments you've made is that you're so young. And I say that respectfully because I have a 16-year-old daughter myself. And when I speak to her and her friends, they're about having a really easygoing high school teenage life. And yet here you are coding at a young age, getting into a competition, you're also a podcaster, you have your own podcast, and then you're about to start your own social enterprise. Where did this drive, this passion, this movement came from? Is it your upbringing, or were you always like that?
Yeah, I think that's a very good question. If I had to like point it to one thing, I can't say it's one specific moment, rather the accumulation of various experiences. And these experiences helped me to see that I think there's more to life than what is expected for me. So to elaborate a bit, as a teenager, I think the bar for teenagers in society is very, very low. Like, we have the brain capacity of a functioning adult, but really in society, the expectation is much lower. Like, we're just expected to show up to this building for 6 hours, come home, sleep, or talk to our friends, then go to the building, whatever, and then go to the mall or whatever. So I think that the expectation is really, really low. And because of that, I don't think that most kids are meeting what they are truly capable of. If you raise the bar for somebody, people will rise to the occasion. That's something that most people are familiar with. But I think it works in the reverse too, where if you lower the bar, people will fall to meet that bar, even though it's unnecessarily low. So growing up, I think there have been a number of experiences where I've been exposed to what young people are capable of and what I'm capable of, where, you know, people have supported me or I've pursued challenges that have helped give me confidence to say, actually, no, I can do a little bit more. I can raise my bar. We can raise this bar. And then through that, it's just like, I've learned to love challenges. I've learned to love failure. And I've learned to see that young people, not just myself, like I'm not special. but young people are capable of so much more than any of us can even fathom.
Is it the peer group that you had, or was it the or is it the just the curiosity and the nature to raise the bar for yourself? Because having expectation is an interesting concept. If you look at the Marines, when you see Marines, they are probably at the top and the sharpest phase of their life when they are in the Marines. But when they leave the Marines, there's some studies that show that they don't keep at that, you know, performance level. And some research has found out that the reason why Marines are at the highest peak of their life is because of the expectations of the people around them that kept them there. So where does a 17-year-old teenager get that level of expectation and standards?
Yeah, I think it all comes down to confidence, really. And the only way, in my experience, for like a human being to increase their confidence is not through other people telling them they're great. It's through them saying, it's through a person saying, here's a challenge. I don't know if I can do it, but I'm going to try. Mm-hmm. Oh, that one worked, or I learned something from it. Here's the next challenge. Let me try that. I grew from that experience as well. And then as you go through just challenges in general, your confidence grows. And as your confidence grows, you're able to see through the fog, and you're able to see that the bar was really low. I can push it higher. So I guess the question that you're asking is like, where did that start? Where does that start? Yeah. So I think, yeah, that's hard. Like, because
your earliest memory.
This has been an ongoing process, I guess. So I guess it started like with my first exposure to technology. Like this was mm-hmm. this new thing that I had no experience with in the beginning. It was through like this robotics kit competition for little kids, where you were building these little Lego robots in elementary school. And that was a new challenge for me. And I didn't know anything about it. And I think we actually lost that competition. But something about like being the little like stubborn 10-year-old I was like, we lost, but there's something here. I know there's more. I know I can do something. There's this challenge. I wasn't able to face it last time, but I want to do it. And then I had this like burning passion or like burning need to do better in that area, right? So I think I had this funnel for me to focus my energy into and like gain my confidence in that vertical. And then that translated through the rest of my life.
Yeah, and I want to talk about that challenge because you were not only a programmer at that robotics challenge, you were also the head programmer. And so I would assume you'd be leading other kids. Where did the sense of leadership came to you?
Yeah, so in my final year on the team, I was head programmer. Where did it come from? I think, I've never like looked in the mirror and thought like, I want to be a leader when I grow up, or like, I am a leader. I think it's like, I don't know. I think I really like helping people. I feel like I get the greatest sense of satisfaction when I feel like my energy is being funneled in a way where I'm benefiting other people. So I think like growing up, I've had some opportunities to lead people, but I never really saw it as me being the leader. More as like, I get to help my team. I get to help these group of people. I get to help us work towards a goal. I guess it was the same with Tech Explorer, right? I never really saw myself as a leader. I was just like, I have this vision. And if we all work together, we can help each other. We can help these kids. We can do awesome stuff. So yeah, I think, so where does it come from? I think that's maybe just, I'm very stubborn. And like if I believe in something, if I care about something, I'll make it happen. And I guess sometimes coincidentally, I've been in leadership positions because of that.
So talk to us about Tech Explorer, because you're the founder and CEO of this youth-run social enterprise. And so I believe as a youth, when we spoke earlier, you are bootstrapping this program. Is that correct?
Yeah, so Tech Explorer, that was the startup that I worked on for a couple of years in high school. I started it in grade 10. Mm-hmm. I built that out. I was able to help over 1,000 kids through that program. At the beginning, it was bootstrapped the entire way. So at the beginning, it was really funny. I was this kid with an idea, and I had no idea if I could do anything. All I knew was that I wanted to help bring tech education to other students. That's all I knew. So I started off really small, just all alone. So I asked my robotics teacher one day I asked my computer science teacher one day if I could borrow his robotics kits and do a workshop at one school. I told them, I can convince one school to let me do a workshop, and then we'll see what happens. And then this thing, that single workshop where I'd borrowed some robotics kit and like slapped together a workshop, turned into this organization where we were working with over 1,000 kids. And I had a team of people helping me, and we were able to do a lot of good in a relatively short amount of time.
And so having 1,000 of, I would say, clients, right, or customers, and a team of volunteers or paid staff, how was that feeling scaling up something from just an idea you had to serving that many people? What did you learn about scaling at that young age?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, there are a lot of so I was completely in the dark. So mm-hmm. There are a lot of things that I just did not grasp. One of them being just the concept of even something as rudimentary or something that seems as obvious as marketing. Mm-hmm. As a kid, I was really passionate. I was like 15 years old and I was passionate about this idea. But the first problem I encountered was, hey, nobody is signing up for this thing because nobody knows what it is. Mm-hmm. So now there's this whole thing called marketing. Wow. So I spent a lot of time reading, just trying things, like just throwing a million darts at things until something stuck. So yeah,
what worked in the marketing? How did you manage to catch fire and then drive it?
Yeah, so there are two big factors. I think one was word of mouth. Teachers that we worked with who were really excited about what we were doing, they just naturally shared it with other people. And the second piece was kind of off of this, but online. So I started asking teachers I'd worked with who were happy with, who were like excited and happy to start to just record a quick video testimonial and let me post it online. Mm-hmm. And then from there, now I had this whole base that other people were able to see, and I was able to create social proof. So that was really like the big gateway moment for me.
This is an interesting growth approach, because in most founders and even early stage or late stage founders, there's a heavy reliance on Facebook ads and Instagram ads and paid marketing. But you're learning at a very young age that there is some benefits into grassroots, viral, looking for support, building a base. How has that experience affected you? Because one of the key things that most people look for when they start a startup is looking for funding to hire people, but also to market. How has that influenced your leadership now as you're going on to your second enterprise?
Yeah, that's a great question. Yeah, so because I've never really had like funding on anything, I guess I'm used to having to bootstrap it and be really, really scrappy about my way of thinking. Like I'm never like, I have a bunch of cash to burn through, so I'm just going to try this and like throw money everywhere. So I guess that made me be very, very organized and laser focused in my approach, because I didn't have a lot of money, A, and I also didn't have a lot of time, B, because I was doing this while I was in school. I was on an incredibly competitive robotics team. I was balancing extracurriculars and everything else. So resources were not something I ever had a lot of, and mm-hmm. having like all these tight requirements, I think forced me to be very, or like taught me how to be very focused and very organized about how I go after things.
So constraints was actually a blessing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I completely agree.
Okay. And so now you've started up Startup Dojo, and I think there's a philosophy around Startup Dojo, and I'm looking at your career, and it's an impressive career for someone so young, but you've always been looking at democratizing education, awareness, and experience for young people. So talk to us about the idea around Startup Dojo.
Yeah, definitely. So the concept behind Startup Dojo is to help teach kids to be entrepreneurial, and then give them a support system that will allow them to take this entrepreneurial mindset and use it to solve real world problems that they care about. Yeah, I think kids are capable of so much. And when you nurture their creativity, when you nurture their curiosity, kids can do incredible things, and they can actually become a huge contribution to society. Which is not something that most people expect. So that's kind of our mission. It's to help give kids the resources, the support, the mentorship to help them reach their potential and you know, become who they are meant to be through building out their own ideas.
And how are you crowdsourcing or enrolling the kind of faculty that need to support this mission that you're doing with Startup Dojo? How are you going about getting support for this? Is it a function of your previous experience that's lending credibility to this enterprise that you're doing? Or are people just evaluating you brand new, given this new startup that you're doing?
I think it's a mix of the two. So I think a piece of it is like a lot of people who are familiar with the work I've done with Tech Explore, they believe in the vision, and they believe that the vision is something that I am capable of executing on. So a lot of them are very excited about this. And there's a lot of belief from people who are aware of Tech Explore and from that side. But of course, we're also trying to spread awareness to people who have no idea who I am and have no idea of anything else I've worked on. So on that side, I've been experimenting a bit. With online Facebook, YouTube ads. I'm just trying to see where that goes a little bit. Trying to build out a marketing funnel via webinars, via the podcast, possibly. Yeah, so it's an ongoing process of me just trying a few things.
And talk to us about how valuable these experiences were when you were trying to apply for admissions into UPenn and Wharton. How did these life experiences, did it help you? Did it give you an edge? Or did it actually kind of concern you because you're running an enterprise as well as going into one of the Ivy League schools in the States?
That's a great question. I think every kid should try and figure out what they're passionate about and just do that, because that's the only way that you're going to be able to find some sort of direction early on in your life. It's kind of funny when you think about it. We send kids to 12 grades of school, so 14 years in total of school, where you're just learning a bunch of subjects. And then we say, all of a sudden, now decide what you want to do for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. Right? How are you supposed to know? I've studied math, I've studied science, and I've studied English. It's like, oh, but now I want to be a lawyer. Wait, where did that come from? Right? Mm-hmm. So I think it's very important for young people to try and figure out what they want to do by doing things. So for that reason, I believe that my experience with Tech Explore was one of the most valuable ways I could have spent my time, because it allowed me to do exactly that. I was able to just doggedly chase this thing I cared about and decide, hey, this is something I love. Entrepreneurship, business, engineering. I love these things and I want to do this for the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm. And you brought up something really interesting. You go to school, you learn all these subjects, and then folks like yourself and a lot of people are saying, do what you're passionate about. But being a teenager, growing up, and the reason why I'm asking this question is a lot of young people struggle with this subject of going after your passion or even knowing your passion when you have a regimented amount of subjects and things to get through. So talk to us for young people listening to this podcast about a framework that you found was useful for you, and maybe speak about how other frameworks that people that you've met who's as young as you are who managed to find your passion, if you can kind of walk us through that thinking.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think there are a couple of pieces to it. So one is breadth. I guess mm-hmm. school definitely helps you in that respect. It forces you to learn about English as well as math, analyze ancient texts as well as learn about calculus and number theory and everything else. So it allows you to get breadth. Outside of that, I think there's a lot of that kids can do to even get even more breadth in specific areas. A, by researching, just going on Khan Academy, going on YouTube, seeing if there's anything that catches your eye. I know, like, throughout my entire life, I've always been a very curious person. So I've always loved learning. So I spent a lot of time, like, on YouTube, watching business videos, watching philosophy videos, watching psychology videos. And there are things that I've learned that I'm interested in just through that kind of natural exploration on my own time. So that's one way. The other way to explore, I think, is to reach out to people. Reach out to older people in different areas and just talk to them. Find mentors. Find people who are willing to support you and guide you. Learn about their life story and see if there's any sort of overlap. Like, Do you see any overlaps in your personalities and the things you care about? Maybe there might be something there for you to explore.
Interesting. And look at the arc of your career to this point. There is a narrative about young people, education, democratizing access. Is this something that you see that you're going to spend the foreseeable future championing and advocating for this idea of education, young people, and access? Is that what you believe your mission is going to be, or are you open for it to kind of be bob and weave across time?
Yeah, I can't really think of anything else that I want to really dedicate myself to for the foreseeable future. I think it is what you said first. I definitely do want to chase after this vision of trying to democratize effective education for young people, because our generation, it's very interesting because we've had a lot of existential issues saddled on our shoulders, from figuring out climate change and figuring out a way to suck carbon out of the air, as well as putting the brakes on carbon emissions. That's a lot of that is definitely going to fall on our shoulders, to any other issue. There's so many problems that our generation needs to solve. And I believe, like, from what I've seen, the education system does not prepare us for the responsibilities that we have going forwards. So I think it's very important that I spend my time now trying to fix that in any way I can, trying to help bolster the education system so that our generation will be more prepared to take these problems head on.
Let's talk about that education system, because it's interesting that you brought it up. There is a discussion around the world right now about knowledge versus skill. And the education system looks like it's primarily geared towards the achievement of knowledge, and very little, emphasis are placed on skills. And I'll give you a very good example. We've had a lot of young people who are coming out into the working world, and they're not equipped to even have things like financial literacy. How do you build wealth? How do you benefit from the asset market? How do you, buy your first house? How do you deal with debt? These are things that are not part of the curriculum when you think about geography and science and history. So I'm curious why you feel the education system is not equipping young people to do this, and B, what needs to change?
So why do I feel the education system is not equipping people? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think a part of it comes down to this skill versus knowledge discussion. Mm-hmm. I think schools are very focused on jamming facts into students' brains, and that's useful to an extent, right? Like, I need to understand math if I want to be an engineer. I need to have a basic understanding of elementary math if I'm going to do anything in life. So there's a level to which the approach is useful, but then I think at some point it becomes not very useful, because a lot of the time in high school, kids are not, by the time most kids reach high school, they're not doing things because they care about it. They're showing up because they have to. They're finishing the grade. They're finishing the assignment because they have to. So they're just putting in the bare minimum to get whatever grade that they want. And it's not a very effective situation. It's not a very effective system, because the people involved are not engaged. Most people I know don't really care about learning. So that is fundamentally a problem to me, because learning is this thing that is so amazing. Right? Like, just the concept of not knowing something, not being able to do something today, and then being able to do it tomorrow, being able to understand this new idea tomorrow. That's crazy. And the fact that us as human beings are able to comprehend complex pieces of information and piece together things and problem solve in creative ways and collaborate using our shared knowledge and shared experience, that's such a crazy thing that no other species can really do. But we have figured out a way to turn this amazing thing, learning, exploring, into this monotonous, horrible grind that nobody likes. And because of that, nobody benefits from. So I think that's the fundamental problem. So we need to figure out a way to engage students and help nurture the creativity, help nurture the curiosity, rather than stomp it out.
It's interesting you said boring, monotonous. My kids tell me school stands for 6 cruel hours of our lives. And I think my kids would agree with you as well. They have the same feeling. But I think that there's also a perspective around lifelong learning, because I think there's something around the education system, say, we'll take you from grade one all the way to university, and then you're done. And then after that, it's up to the employers to train you on the job. What's your perspective on lifelong learning, and do you see that practice being taken by your generation that's coming out in terms of education and learning?
That's a great question. So one of the main purposes behind Startup Dojo is to teach kids to be entrepreneurial. And my goal isn't to churn out a million and one entrepreneurs. My goal is to make kids entrepreneurial. And there's a big distinction. When I say entrepreneurial, I mean, I want kids to not be the kind of people who wait for orders and just do work because they're told to. I want kids to be the kind of people who are curious about the world and actively seek out information. Yes, and some of them may pursue entrepreneurship, some may not, but fundamentally, they are the kind of people who seek out information. They're lifelong learners. So that's the real skill that I want to teach that I don't think that school teaches. So I think that, like you mentioned how school is only from grade 1 to 12. I think making school longer, for example, that won't make people lifelong learners. What will is a fundamental change in the mindset of students and the way that they approach education. I think that's the only way to make people lifelong learners. So it could be a 20-year education, it could be a 5-year education. But I think like something needs to change about the way we teach so that people want to learn and so that they can become lifelong learners who can teach themselves.
Yeah, and I think that's the interesting thing, right? Because if you leave it to the parents to be responsible for the kid's education from grade one to university, and then you hand the kid over to the employers and expect the employers to then train that kid for the jobs they are doing, but not jobs of the future, when you have a paradigm shift like the fourth industrial revolution that we're seeing right now with technology, AI, blockchain, robotics, people get displaced, right? And so there's very little focus on how do we change the mindset that learning is a lifelong thing, and it's incumbent from every individual, governments, organizations to instill and create the opportunities for lifelong learning. And they are not there right now in the society.
Yeah, I completely agree. I completely agree.
Right. So looks like you're really, if I'm hearing the conversation over the last 20 minutes, it looks like you're advocating for a group of renegades to come out, be independent thinkers, think for themselves, go against the grain, and then create opportunities for other people. It sounds like you're creating a renegade school.
I'm creating a renegade school. That's exactly right.
Well, as we ended this episode, what's your wish for young people who are living in Cambodia or Vietnam or Philippines or Zimbabwe, who may not have access to technology and opportunity like what you have? How can a young person, and we have listeners from all over the world listening to this, but may not be as fortunate as you or some of the kids, like my kids living in this country, to have access to these opportunities? What's your wish for them? How can they get started?
Yeah, so is there like a level of access that that the people you're referring to have, or is it like nothing at all, no computers, nothing?
I think they do have some access to computers. I think they do have some access to the internet. For sure, they're having access to mobile phones, but they may not have access to the sort of support, training, encouragement, models that you may have been accustomed to. How does one build that community? Because it's interesting that you built your business with very little, with zero cash, and the support of your teachers. How can a young person listening to this podcast and interested in entrepreneurship get on this path, putting yourself in where they could be coming from, right? Third world.
I think no matter where you're from, I think the core idea is to just do uncomfortable things. So always figure out what like always be thinking about where are challenges and where are opportunities for growth. And if when you think about those things, they make you uncomfortable, that's probably a sign that you should do it. Right? Because that's where the learning is. If you're trying to do something that you think is a challenge and you're not uncomfortable by the thought of doing it, it's not a challenge. You're not going to grow. Do things that are uncomfortable and constantly push yourself to grow. And if you do that every day, you'll have traveled a million miles by, you know, the end of a few years. You won't see it day by day, but you will. Yeah. After you just waited through.
And if they need a resource, they can always go to Startup Dojo, right?
Yes, that too. Please reach out to Startup Dojo. We're global. We're an online community for anybody and everybody from around the world. So please do reach out. Contact me if you're interested. Definitely.
And when is this community going live? Is it scheduled to go live this year? Has it gone live already?
Already live. It is already live. Yeah. So it's really cool. We have a community of luminaries who are individuals who have founded companies worth tens of millions of dollars to $1 billion. And these individuals are essentially resources that all of our students can tap into through regular events that we run with these luminaries. So it's awesome. We're building a community of people who've been there, done that, these luminaries, as well as students from around the world who can work together to think of new ideas, to learn, and to grow.
Great. Anjali, thank you for sharing your inspiring story, and we wish you all the success and luck in empowering and educating every young person in the planet.
Yeah, that's the goal. Thank you so much.
Okay.